Well, good afternoon and happy August. Welcome to Your Health is Your Wealth. You're listening to North Idaho Radio. I'm Lindy Lewis, and I am very pleased to have a guest in studio today, and her name is Julie, and she's visiting, and we're going to talk about some of the hard stuff, some of the stuff that isn't always talked about. And I actually kind of got a little nervous because I don't know a lot about this topic, but I think it's a big issue out there in our world. And I want to just introduce our guest, Julie, and we're going to talk about addiction today.
Hi, I'm Julie. Lindy, thank you so much
for having me on the show. I'm happy to be here. And I will also admit that I was a little nervous. I am a little nervous talking about this. I'm happy to be of service, and I'm anxious to dig in so we can get some information out to your listeners.
Yeah, I think it's, it's a topic. It's funny. I think it's we were doing some research, and she's just up visiting. I'm actually very very grateful that back in her day she made the choice to jump into recovery, because she's been clean and sober for about 30 years, and she is now one of my most fun playmates. And we had just a wonderful time. We were able to hike to the cabin today, and I don't know if that would have been possible if you were still addicted.
That probably wouldn't have been possible. I might not be in North Idaho.
She might not be above ground.
That's true.
I mean, when you're living with addiction, you're living fast, you're living furious, and it's never an easy thing. And I think it's one of those things we were discussing a little bit about. Often everybody, you said it so lovely that it's a thing that you don't think you're addicted. You don't think it's actually an addiction.
Yes, I said it's a disease that tells you you're not, that you don't have the disease. So that's what addiction and alcoholism. It's telling you that that no, it's okay. I really don't drink too much, or Joe down the street drinks a lot more than I do, or I'm only in my 20s. This is the time you're supposed to party. So yes, it tells you that you don't have an addiction or alcoholism.
Right. Yeah. I think that's not that everybody out there is addicted. I mean, a glass of wine to decompress is a great thing. We also had that great conversation. But I think sometimes when it becomes a problem, it can be a real detriment to your life. And then since this show is Your Health is Your Wealth, this is an opportunity to maybe, if you're listening or you might know somebody out there that has an addiction, this would be an opportunity for you to maybe point them. We've got some great resources that we'll mention at the end of the show, and Julie can explain her process. But right now I want to just get into a little bit about Julie's story and talk about what did your life look like when you were addicted?
Well, that's a great question. Lindy, I guess you and I have known each other, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. And I've been clean and sober not quite 30 years. So God willing, in a couple of months,
really
I can
close.
Make the 30-year mark.
Yeah.
But that sounds like a crazy number. And I don't always say that number because in a way, it's unbelievable even to myself. When I first got clean and sober, I would have never been able to imagine what life would even look like a year down the road or 5 years down the road, never mind this amount of time down the road.
Did you think you were addicted when you were in it?
I knew at the end I was addicted, and I think that we all do. I think that what's fun in games, possibly, if you want to look at it that way, and in college or high school, and I think that it becomes less fun in games, certainly for the addicted or alcoholic person as time goes on. And yes, there are very real inklings in your mind that you don't quite drink or the way that others do, that maybe they're fine to go home and quit at 1 a.m., but you're still, party's still roaring at 3 or 4 or 5. And I think we all know that person when we were in college or whenever, that a lot of fun, but that person never knew when to quit. Maybe that's one way to put it.
And I love that you're saying, when we were in college, but I guess I think, there's a lot of struggle in our world right now there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of a lot of pressure for people to make ends meet, to raise a family in a complicated society. So I think addiction is also, it's not just necessarily college. I think it's kind of all ages anymore.
No, absolutely. And as time goes on, what might have been good-natured, fun partying and letting loose when you're younger becomes less and less of that as you get older and more mature. And often most of us are able to put down those things as we grow in life and have a different life and make a choice, And when you're an addict or an alcoholic, you cross an invisible line and you're no longer able to make that choice.
You just can't stop.
You just can't stop. Yeah. You try to control it a million kind of ways. And I guess, we all know people that try to drink a glass of water between every glass of wine, or only drink beer instead of drink alcohol, or, oh no, I never drink tequila because that really puts me over the edge, or I only drink when it's Sunday afternoons and the ball game is on. Mm-hmm. So we have a million reasons and excuses, and we also find a whole lot of ways of trying to manage our drinking or drugging so that it's okay.
Mm-hmm. So you were one of those people. You were one of those people functioning in your 20s up into your 30s, living with men. How many years do you think you lived with addiction?
Well, you know, I first started drinking or smoking pot when I was, I guess, in eighth grade, you know, like pre-high school, like many people do, 13 years old, trying it.
Absolutely.
And not uncommon. Mm-hmm. And my dad was an alcoholic. And so they do say that there is the disease of addiction and alcoholism and that it is genetic. And my dad was that. But certainly I would have looked at my dad drinking and wanted to never be like that.
Right.
So that would have been a conscious idea in my mind as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like many people in high school, yes, people drank on the weekends, people hid it from their parents, et cetera. And I guess I started to see when I was in college that when I started drinking or partying or doing drugs, I did not want to stop. My party wasn't over at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. My party wanted to keep going. And that was a real uncomfortable thought for me. It was a very uncomfortable, shameful way to look at myself that everybody else, what was wrong with me? Why could everybody else just stop and, you know, call it a night, and I couldn't? Or even if I tried to control that and stopped, inside I still wanted to keep partying, mm-hmm. as we use that euphemism.
Yeah, it's so I wish you could see this beautiful, vibrant soul who's sitting in front of me. So again, as I mentioned, I'm so grateful that you made that choice for yourself, and we did talk about it, you know, during before the show started, that it's a choice she makes every single day. You know, that once you've had that addiction, that it's easy to circle back to it. Or I think we also discussed that it is, you know, there's some genetic. I think there's more and more studies saying that it is genetic. And I'd mentioned to Julie, I said, gosh, I don't like using the word genetic because it just plants that seed. And in my mind, that would be like, oh, well, it's kind of, I can just, you know, kick back and it's genetic. And I just wondered, you know, I didn't want to plant that seed. But on the other hand, you know, it is, I mean, go ahead and talk about how you thought it was a great thing for the awareness.
Yes, and actually, Lindy and I had a great conversation today.
Too
bad we weren't recording it at that time. But yes, we did talk about that, and I totally agree with you that crutches, or you know, it's genetic, or I have to I drive crazy because my dad drove crazy, or there's a million ways that we can say that we do things, and the reason that we are the way we are, it's because of some outside forces, either the way we grew up, etc., or that teacher that we had at school. But I think that. But in my family, everyone is not addicted or alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So my siblings that grew up in the same house with me with the same set of circumstances are not alcoholics or addicts. So it doesn't mean that you have to be, but it is a great tool or a red flag or something to just use as being aware.
Yeah. The awareness, you know, after we argued this point, because I'm like, nope, I don't even want that seed planted because I have it's a fertile mind in there, you know, and you don't want to take off. On the flip side, the awareness, it's just like me having the MS. It's like, it's nice to know that I have MS. It's nice to know that all of these symptoms go with the MS, but I'm choosing to say, okay, that's what's happening and that's what's possible. But right now I'm, you know, it's a choice every day to, you know, hike or, you know, make sure that I get some yin time and do a little bit less for me managing a disease in the body. And in a sense, you're managing a disease in the body too. Isn't alcoholism a disease?
It is a disease.
Or drug addiction?
And so the way that you're able to manage yours and make choices every day that you either shouldn't get too tired or to take care of yourself, that would be the same thing that one would do if there's alcoholism or addiction in your family. You know, it's not a big deal to look at the way that you're drinking or doing drugs and just have awareness around that. And Lindy is not an addict or alcoholic, but those of us who are, we know inside, and that's that knowingness and that feeling is something, as I said, that I knew from the time I was 19, and I had that little feeling that I tried so hard to push down, and the shame about not drinking or drugging the way other people or the way I thought other people were able to manage. So those of us who have that feeling, we know that feeling inside.
Yeah. It is. Well, when we're going to continue with my beautiful friend Julie, who came up for visit, and I said, you know what? I would love to have you as a radio guest on our North Idaho radio station, just to see if there's anybody out there who might know someone or just inspire somebody to get help should you be in a position to. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that Julie did to actually step into this 30-year recovery that she's been now enjoying and living incredibly vibrantly with. So thank you for listening to North Idaho Radio. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to North Idaho Radio. You're listening to Your Health is Your Wealth. I am very delighted and honored to have my beautiful friend Julie as a guest today. And we're talking about the hard stuff. We're talking about addiction. And it was just an interesting conversation that we had. And we thought not many people sometimes talk about that. Or if they do, they're in some sort of help. But what we really wanted to do was just sort of bring some of this to light. And during our break, we were talking about how when you're in this shameful place of addiction, you know, it's pretty scary in the mind. You don't think anybody else is thinking like you're thinking. And I think that was one of the reasons that I was really pleased that Julie was willing to talk about this. But what can you say about what's going on when you're in that shameful place? And again, she's been a recovering addict for 30 years, nearly 30 years.
Yes, thank you. And of course, Lindy and I had a great conversation during the break. But yeah, about being in that place. And I guess as I touched upon in the last segment was just starting to have those inklings of not being able to quit partying, as we put it, or not being able to slow down on the drugs or alcohol like other people, or trying to find ways in which to control it. And from having that inkling, it took me years more of trying to control it, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. You know, we often have lifestyles and work in places where it's maybe okay to drink, or, you know, food and beverage, or places where that lifestyle is not frowned upon. So sometimes maybe we choose that type of a lifestyle on purpose so that we can continue to drink or do drugs in it. And we are like the others around us, or, you know, better yet, we are not like the ones who are really bad off. So it's always easy to look at ourselves, you know, as I said, and look at, you know, the guy next door who really drinks or really does a lot of drugs and really has a problem, or the homeless person on the street that really has a problem. But, you know, meanwhile, the whole time you're feeling inside and looking at yourself and realizing that you really have a problem. But the shame and the fear of asking for help, or thinking that we need to figure it all out ourselves. You know, I certainly thought that I needed to figure out how to stop. It was my problem. I created it.
Oh, and it's embarrassing.
It was shameful, you know? And embarrassing. Yeah. I certainly couldn't ask for help. Yeah. I was, you know, of course, raised.
At least it's embarrassing. That's what you thought, and you were alone in it. But it's a common feeling, I think.
It's a common feeling. Yes, it's a we don't know what our common feelings are until we share with other people who probably were also shameful about their common feelings. Mm-hmm. And only once we get past that ourselves are we able to reach out to others. And that's really where the growth and the help and really as you go forward in life, the spiritual connection with other people, that's where it comes from, you know, and that's where it starts. But we don't have any of that when we're deep in that dark place. And we're all, you know, often in that place for different reasons, perhaps. But I think we all know what that feels like, to feel really super alone and super ashamed.
Oh, and we isolate, you know, with me with the disease, or when I was, you know, when things were progressing and with the divorce. And of course, you know, that dark, dark place, and you don't know who to turn to. So that's actually a lovely segue into what did you do when you were in this dark, dark place? Should there be someone out there, or if you know somebody that you think could possibly be addicted, I'm not even sure how you would bring that conversation to light with someone you loved or cared about. But what could they do? What are resources they could access, and what brought you to it?
Okay, Lindy, those are a lot of questions.
Okay,
but I think
so
I can remember
okay.
each one.
All right,
but,
let's do this.
But yeah, no, that is a great point. And certainly, you know, where was I in that place, that place of trying to figure it out? And to be honest, I think that nobody really makes big changes in their lives until, as they say, the pain outweighs the gain. You know, whatever it is and how I'm living my life, when it becomes too painful to go forward, I'm too scared to know what to do. I'm too scared to ask for help, but I can't go backward. It's too painful to keep going forward into the life I was in. And, you know, with me, with the drugs and alcohol, certainly, you know, without going into war stories, but, you know, there were many invisible lines in the sand that I had drawn, you know, that I would never, you know, do drugs like this. I would never shoot dope and go to law school. I would never, you know, do this or that. I crossed many of those lines in the sand. And I think we had also talked about, you know, as a woman or with kids, maybe I would never drive drunk in the car with my kids. You know, there's all sorts of those lines. And we find that as an alcoholic or an addict, I found that I crossed those lines. You know, it's so demoralizingly, you know, one line after the next. Meanwhile, I, you know, created more shame and more.
Yeah, the guilt with that, too.
The like guilt, the shame, the wreckage.
You sell yourself out.
And you know it. Others mm-hmm. know it and you know it. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard to live with.
Right.
And then for many people, including myself, the drunk drivings, the, you know, getting arrested, the, you know, the shameful thing of somebody having to help you get to your car, somebody carrying you inside, not remembering how you got home, not remembering when you wake up who the person was next to you, looking for a piece of mail in that person's house to try to figure out what their name was and where the hell you were.
Gosh. You see that in the movies, but it's real.
But it's real. It's real, you know. And, yeah, sometimes in the movies it's funny, but I think to those of us – and it. Thank God I will say that being in recovery, those crazy things are funny now, but they're funny now because I'm looking at them from a different place because they're crazy and because I don't have to live that way anymore. So for me, when things got really bad, you know, I was very blessed that that my mom – had found my family knew I was addicted, but I also had had tried to quit doing drugs for about 9 months, and I was quite vocal about it. And when I started doing drugs again, because I had no plan, I just quit. I had no plan of how to stay quit. And I think that's really the problem with the alcoholic and addict is that if we don't have a plan how to stay quit, everybody can quit. People are always quitting drinking for the weekend or quitting until next Tuesday or they're quitting for Lent. But if we don't have a plan for how to stay quit, then we're not going to stay quit. And really, to continue to have lived my life the way I was, going from one catastrophe to the next, having moments of time in between catastrophes or wreckage where I would be out doing drugs and creating wreckage of maybe a drunk driving or maybe having to have a court date or maybe not being able to pay my rent or maybe missing work. You know, between that and then getting, you know, not doing drugs for a few days, trying to fix all of that, all the relationships that I wrecked, the people keep in touch with, mm-hmm. my family that was worried about me, even though I lived 3,000 miles away and they couldn't even see what was going on. Mm-hmm. But so meanwhile, I would be, you know, in my addiction or on a binge. And then I would, when that finished for a few days, I knew I had kind of a few days before it would start again. I'd try to clean everything up, you know, and take care of everything because I would just be out again for a few days. And that was very obviously physically exhausting and very scary. And the fact that I was completely powerless over drugs and alcohol, you know, they showed up at my door. I was going to get loaded and I was going to do whatever it took to get them. And I was going to do whatever it took to just keep on extending, quote unquote, the party, you know, for the next 5 days.
Yeah. Well, it's a real we both have a mutual friend who lost their son to addiction this year. And, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, the reality, I mean, it is fun to party, and oftentimes it's okay to unwind with this and that. But if you can't control it, I mean, you can actually OD and die. We read about it. We hear about it. It's reality.
Yes, and I OD'd. You know, I've OD'd before, and I have to say, when I went to treatment and I was talking about some things and the counselors pointed out to me, I said, well, that wasn't really ODing. They're like, yes, actually, that was an overdose. So I think that certainly when I'm in the addiction and alcoholism, I minimize what I go through. You know, the same way people might minimize date rape, or we minimize the things that we, you know, that happen to us, and we minimize the things that we are ashamed about as well. So
yeah, I think that's a good thing for you to say a little bit more. What do you think the advantage of the minimizing it help me in your world, like in the addiction world?
I minimized it because it was terrifying to realize that this was how my life was going. And this was never how I thought my life was going to be. When I was young, did I think that I was going to be an addict? Did I want to be an addict? No. My dad was an alcoholic, right. A functioning alcoholic. Mm. But did I ever think that I would be just as much of a mess, but more so than that? No. Did I think that I would be shooting dope? No. Nobody thinks that. Nobody wants to grow up and shoot dope or grow up and, mm-hmm. You know, other people break into houses or all the shameful things that we do.
No, it can be a real problem, especially in as you start to recognize it. And I think that's the thing you're sharing so honestly, which I really, really appreciate. We're going to run to a break and we'll not really go anywhere, but we're going to just take a quick break and we'll be back on North Idaho Radio with Your Health is Your Wealth. Hello and welcome back to Your Health is Your Wealth. You're listening to North Idaho Radio. My guest in the studio today is Julie, and she is just a lovely recovering alcoholic or addict, and she's been clean and sober for nearly 30 years, and I'm honored that she is so honestly sharing her heart and her story with us. And in the last segment, if you're just joining us, we had a great conversation about, you know, that dark place of addiction and the shame. And really what I want to move in with this next little segment here is just you talked a lot about the stay quit, which essentially is, you know, when you stop, how do you truly stop long term? And that is, as we were talking about, where the freedom really lies for you. So maybe you can talk a bit about that for us.
Sure. Thank you, Lindy. Yes. That is where the freedom lies. And I guess at the end of my alcoholism and addiction, and I was no longer free. And when you sit inside of a house doing dope or drinking and your life is not your own.
Or not going out.
Not going out. And there's a lot of ways people control their drinking. One of them is they just drink at home. So mm-hmm. they don't get the DUIs and they don't have to drive. So it's very interesting sometimes when we scratch a little deeper of the surface of why we make the choices we do to tell ourselves that we're not alcoholics and addicts. And so, yes, I was completely, I think we had also talked about that nobody makes any, you know, nobody wakes up one day and decides to go to AA, just the same way nobody wants to be an alcoholic or addict. You only go to AA because you don't know what else to do. You are completely at your very last wit's end. Everything you've ever tried hasn't worked. You have not been able to stop doing drugs or alcohol, even though you've quit a million times, or you've made a decision that you're just not going to drink tonight, but you find yourself drinking. So I think only when you're in so much pain that you're willing to do whatever it takes because you don't know what to do.
Right.
And your life is not only is it not getting better, it's not even remaining at the same sort of not good place. It's actually very
still
visibly spiraling downward, mm-hmm. you know, and you can't stop it. No matter what you do, you mm-hmm. can't stop it. You can't stop doing drugs or drinking, and you can't stop your life going down. So I was blessed that I went to treatment. Now, I wanted to go to treatment. I knew I needed to go to quit doing drugs. And that's what I thought I was going to learn in treatment. So I went, thought I'd come right back out to live in my old lifestyle. And when I got to treatment, I was not so happily surprised to find out that it was, as I said to my the counselors, oh, this is that AA shit, isn't it? At which they
right.
laughed and said, yes, Julie, this
the
is
AA
that
stuff.
AA stuff. So anyways, that's where I ended up. And thank goodness. Thank God, you know, they told me, I know I've talked about drugs on this show and some alcoholism, but it was very clear to me, and they pointed out that when I wasn't doing drugs, I was drinking. And that it would be very easy to stop doing drugs, but yet
and
to replace
it with the alcohol.
And I
sure.
didn't. I clearly did not want that pain. Mm-hmm. The pain of mm-hmm. changing my entire life was so great that to think about having to do it again with alcohol in a year or two was terrifying to me. So I was willing, as only we say in the program, as only the dying can be, I was willing to do what somebody else told me because I was completely beaten down. And I saw that my best efforts had landed me and all my best efforts of who I thought I would be. I was in treatment.
There's another phrase you've used a bit just in our conversations is that you finally made the choice to really get involved in AA and commit to the AA, you know, when the pain outweighs the gain.
Yep.
And I think that that's a pretty powerful statement, and that is maybe what continues to just remind you to stay clean and sober.
It does. And in life, I mean, that's just a great phrase because we don't make any changes in life until what we're trying to leave behind becomes so painful the way we're living that we're willing to try something different.
Right.
And that's human nature, I guess. And thank God for that. So when we're in a lot of pain about something in life, I guess that is our opportunity to make a change.
Where the deep growth comes. I mean, that's where I dug in with the disease or the divorce or, you know, with the dyslexia. I mean, those are the dark places that you can start to find the next layer of hope or where you can grow. You mentioned the AA shit, quote unquote. What would that look like? What is that stuff? I mean, it works. That shit works. It's good stuff. And you know, I wish y'all could see her. She's just a lovely soul.
It works. And I have to say that is not where I thought I'd end up in my life. That was not where I was anxious to be. I was horrified, really, that I had whatever my conceptions or preconceptions of AA were, that this is where I had ended up. But I was so scared of sliding back into my old life that I was willing to take whatever life raft that anybody was throwing me, and I was just going to do it because these people seemed happy and I was not. So I did what I was told for maybe the first time in my life. And as it reaped rewards on a daily basis, you know, things got better for me and I felt better about myself. And they told me if I just stayed clean and sober that things would get better. And I didn't have to want it 100% because that's unrealistic, but if I just wanted it a little more
than 50.
Yeah.
Just on the other side of 50.
50.00001 that it would work for me, you know, and I was able to see other people whose lives it was working in. And I grabbed onto the winners, as they say.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. You grabbed onto the winners. Mm-hmm. Do you go to regular things still as a recovering
I do. And I hesitate to sort of say this sometimes because I think that people are like, oh, dear God, you know, what are you saying? I've got to go to these stupid meetings for like the rest of my life.
Well, it's like Weight Watchers maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they go
to them
forever.
I think that would be depressing too. You're going forever. But I guess that for me, you know, AA and quitting doing drugs and alcohol, it becomes once I put down the drugs and alcohol, that becomes AA becomes less of how to stop drinking and doing dope than it does how to start living a new life. And that's all I ever wanted. I wanted freedom. And I think we talked about that. And as a teenager, I couldn't wait to get out of my parents' house to be free.
Right.
Free.
Oh,
do what
gosh.
I want. Do what
that.
I want.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then what I wanted, you know, found me in my late 20s sitting in a bathroom or sitting at a dining room table doing dope for 2 days. And that was not free.
Mm-mm.
You know, and so to come into, you know, a 12-step recovery program and find the ways to remain free. And when what was really lifted from me as well was I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, as they say, in my alcoholism and addiction, when things might go good for a little while, but then they were going to get bad again, you know, or people say the shit hits the fan or things were going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And in AA and being clean and sober, I'm not waiting for that. I'm not waiting for when I'm going to go back out and use or drink again and create a whole bunch of stuff that I have to deal with.
Yeah. Well, it's actually quite fun that you would say that. We talked a little bit about living in the solution. And when we return after our break, this is our last break, we will talk a little bit more about what that looks like to live in the solution. And I think Julie is certainly doing that with her addiction after 30 years. And that's what I'm choosing to do with the MS in the body. So when we get back, you will hear a little bit more about that. I hope you're having a great day. Wow, our segment is just flying by today. Welcome back to Your Health is Your Wealth and North Idaho Radio. I am Lindy Lewis, and our guest in the studio today is Julie, my beautiful friend. And she's talking to us about addiction and her own personal experience with addiction. And before we took a break, we were just talking about what her process was and starting to get involved with AA and how that offered some support to her. We have also talked about how it's been was a real shameful, embarrassing place to seek help. But now we're in this process. We talked a little bit about living in the solution, and I think that is a really great thing that we can focus on. And part of that is just there's freedom when you choose to live in the solution. It's a very empowering place. So what can you share with us on that?
Well, freedom is a great word. And yes, certainly today I would feel that I do have freedom in my life to be able to choose who I want to be, choose how I want to be, and I guess to be able to follow through. Before I got clean and sober, I had a lot of ideas and a lot of great ideas about who I wanted to be. But the reality was I wasn't able to be that. My day-to-day addiction got in the way. I could not follow through on anything, and I could not, extend. You know, I always thought how people got ahead at work or in other things was some type of magic. I didn't realize that day by day doing the work, and I'm able to do that now. I have a freedom to do that now.
It's sort of that journey of 1,000 miles is one step.
Right.
It starts with one step, and I think that's with this recovery journey. Start with one step at a time. And I like the word freedom, but I also really like what we were talking about, like living in the solution. And I think there's a lot of power in that. Otherwise, when you stay an addict, or you stay in that place of a victim, really, there's no power. And I think that's really where Julie's finding the freedom. She's choosing. And I think that's a very empowering place to live the life you want for yourself. And it can be done with maybe some of these resources that you can talk about.
Yes, that's true. And I guess they say that, the only thing we can change is ourselves, but sometimes that changes everything. So when I have the ability to change myself, then I have the ability to make all sorts of changes in my life and live those on a daily basis and choose again and again and again. So I feel very blessed with that. And I guess part of the reason why I still go to AA meetings, I don't maybe go all the time, and maybe sometimes it's less about not picking up a drug or a drink, but it's how to make myself a better person and how to grow. And I find ways to do that there. When I can go to a meeting in the morning and talk about how to spiritually start my day or how I want to react and situations with my boss. These are all ways of living life on life's terms on a day-by-day basis. And that's where I find, I guess, my strength and my hope and also the ability to share with others. I think when we talked before about being shameful and we were all inside ourselves and thought that that nobody else felt the way
we're
I felt.
We're the only ones with that is dark mm-hmm. inside, right?
And nobody had the exact same experiences. Mm-hmm. And I certainly find in 12-step programs that people have had my exact same experience. And there's nothing that I've done that no one else has done or nothing too shameful. And then once I know that, I know that we might not have had the same experiences, even you and I, Lindy, but we had the same feelings.
Right.
And then we can connect on that.
Yeah, we had talked about I've known her for 6 years. We've taken amazing road trips, and she's always often doing one of her AA meetings in Natchez, Mississippi, or wherever we might have been at the time. And it's quite amazing, this living in the solution. We almost just don't even need to talk about it because you're just choosing to continue to take care of yourself in this. And there's a lot of power in that, but you do need the resource. And I think that's where the AA, I really admire that she does continue to go, because it offers sort of that, it holds that space for you to continue to stay in that walk that's best for yourself.
That's true. And I'm blessed that, I'm in a program or a 12-step programs that are found all over the world. I've gone to AA meetings in Africa. I've gone in a mud hut. I've gone back in the day when there was no computers and you could not Google and find a meeting. You had to just to go to the central office and try to find a meeting or a P.O. box or something.
That's maybe a great point. If somebody is interested or thinks they know somebody that might be wanting some sort of some treatment or recommending it, how do they find an AA for that kind of support?
Well, to find AA meetings, I was able to go to treatment. Everybody is not able to do that. Many, many people get clean and sober by going to 12-step meetings, and those are always available everywhere, all day long. So smaller cities might not have as many meetings, but all one has to do is go online and Google Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and they will pop up. So then you can choose in your city and what time or where to go. So that's a blessing and a resource for sure. And also, I know there's a lot of information on the internet now. We all feel like we can Google everything and find out. And certainly if we know somebody who has a problem or, we have somebody in our life who's an alcoholic or addict, there are meetings, there's Al-Anon, there's, you know, ways to go. And I think we had also talked about
Al-Anon. Al-Anon's a very interesting one. You know, it's someone who is living with somebody or in their world has somebody with as an addiction. Al-Anon is simply that same sort of a place for those of us to go who might have somebody in their life that has an addiction. So Al-Anon is another opportunity to Google and get some support for people who want to just support their partner in a better way, or person or child or whatever it might be.
Yes. And we were also saying in a meeting, nobody ever is going to confront you or make you talk.
Yes.
Or you can come late, you can leave early. You know, it's an open meeting and you're able to go in there if you think you need help, whether you're, you know, have someone in your world or if it's help for yourself or you quote unquote need to go to check it out for your friend. So that is a blessing and a resource to be able to do that, to just go in as needed. And there's a lot of freedom and there's not any rules in AA, and it's been around a long time. So
yeah, it's a real silent. Little, because, you know, I would try to ask questions here and there, and it was just it's a very anonymous platform. It's like this gentle, quiet, inspirational movement, really, from my perspective.
And it's anonymous is why we're not using my last name. I can say that I was at a meeting, but I can't say what I heard there or that you were at a meeting. So, you know, that's a blessing. And I think that it certainly is providing, you know, support and people statistically to help people all over the world and to stay sober, get sober and stay sober. And that's where everyone's freedom comes in.
So, you know, my passion tends to be our youngers, our youth. And of course, when we're with Underground Kindness and we're teaching kids, maybe either in juvie or working with them in other areas, if they might be struggling or not even struggling, maybe they don't know, is there a suggestion or something you might tell one of our youngers to make the choice to maybe get out of addiction or something? Is there a suggestion you might have for, like, to tell your 14-year-old self, maybe, is the question I'm looking for.
That's a great question. And you know what? None of us are ready until we're ready. And my 14-year-old self certainly did not see solutions. Would my 14-year-old self been able to hear them? I don't know. But my 14-year-old self did not have anyone else who was in recovery in my world. So, you know, whatever we do to get in recovery and take care of ourselves, obviously that emanates out to everyone we know. So I guess I would tell my 14-year-old self to be aware and to watch the red flags of having the disease of alcoholism or addiction in my family. And also, you know, it's a hard thing for a teenager, but to reach out and ask for help when one needs it.
Boy, it's a hard thing for adults.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, reaching out and asking for help in any framework is a very difficult thing. But I do think for kids, it is for our youngers. I want to just circle back to what Julie said in one of our earlier conversations that, you know, most of the time your feelings are similar to somebody else. I mean, those feelings, they go on in a lot of people's heads. So if you are struggling with something, if you do ask for help, somebody can point you. Hopefully you're not going to get judged for your honesty and you're saying, hey, I want a different choice. And, you know, we're really trying to get you some authentic guidance and hopefully that would work.
Yes, that's true. And yes, I think, you know, for a younger person, there's in AA meetings, you know, there are ones that have younger people, too. There's all kinds
really?
Of meetings.
Oh, really? Can young people go? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. We have that. And we also have meetings in prisons and we have meetings in hospitals and institutions.
Okay,
so
great.
It's open. You know, there is available for many people.
Is it okay? Because I would say the opiates, the over-the-counter prescription drugs are quite a big thing. Just real quickly before we leave, I mean, AA would help with that as well, I would imagine.
Oh, yes. So that's okay. Why it's alcoholism, you know, and alcohol is a drug. So all of the 12-step programs help with all that. And yes, we certainly do have a huge opiate challenge right now in our country. We also have a huge prescription pain medication challenge in our country as well. So it doesn't matter what we're using to change our feelings. That's an addiction, and that can be helped, and we can get strength, and we can get recovery.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. It's not funny. It's actually quite scary. You were saying that, you know, in your that opiates is one in what did you say, eight people? Two in eight people. It was a statistic. You let come out with some sort of an addiction.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. That's what pain medication doctors and back doctors say. Yeah. So you do get addicted. It's not okay just because they prescribed it.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I feel very lucky to have had Julie share so honestly and authentically with her recovery journey of 30 years now. And she's, like I say, I'm so grateful that she did, because I'm not sure I would have known her if she would have stayed in that dark place. And if any of you are out there struggling, you know, just ask for help. I will, I can put some resources up on my website, which is letyourcolorout.com. I can offer some resources there. And I want to thank you for listening to North Idaho Radio, and Your Health is Your Wealth. And I hope you have a wonderful August.
Thank you.